how can every interaction, every engagement, every decision stem from a customer-first ideal? And that means every function in the company needs to believe that they play an important role in keeping our customers successful.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof. It's no secret that the pandemic is underscoring the need for organizations to prioritize customer-obsessed leaders that are arming customers with the guidance, tools, processes, and capabilities to drive successful digital transformation strategies, right? That was a mouthful. That's why I wanted to turn to Lara Kamey. She's the Chief Customer and Partner Officer at ServiceNow, a company that uses tech to transform old manual ways of working into modern digital workflows. I spoke to her about the importance of workflows, what it means to be customer-obsessed, why customer retention has never been seen as sexy, and why that seems to be changing, and how customer expectations are changing these days. So without further ado, let's jump right in.
Lara, welcome to Future Proof.
Thanks. So thrilled to be here.
I know we'll have a little bit of this in the intro, but in your own words, who are you and what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I'm Lara Kamey. I am the Chief Customer and Partner Officer at ServiceNow. And so I've been at ServiceNow for about 3 years. I started as our Chief Strategy Officer, where I helped to define our long-term strategy, what we call our path to 10 billion. Before that, I spent 17 years serving clients in mainly technology as a partner at Bain & Company. And in July, I took on the role of our Chief Customer Partner Officer, where I lead all of our post-sales activities around customer success, professional services, training, certification, and our alliances and channels ecosystem world as well.
Which is obviously a lot, you know, for one person to handle. But I think obviously you've been doing this for quite a while. And I think that there's a unique opportunity nowadays, in particular for leaders, to try to champion digital transformation and have their organizations, you know, take that extra step forward in order to tap that incremental revenue, right? So I'm wondering, like, how important do you see a leader's role in driving digital transformation strategies, especially in a time like this?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, I guess there's a couple of things. First of all, I think digital transformation has been kind of a buzzword for a while, but now I think it's absolutely, you know, in the wake of COVID and everything we've seen during the pandemic, has become a true business imperative. It you know, if companies are not sort of actively looking towards ways to digitally transform their employee experience, their customer experience, or frankly, to drive increased productivity while top lines have been challenged during this, they're going to fall behind competition. And so there's no question to me that it's a must do for all organizations. And as leaders, you know, it's our job to ensure that we provide the communication and the clarity to our employees to get that done. And so, you know, in particular, I think it's a time of real uncertainty for our employees. And so what I found is the need to massively over-communicate, which we saw obviously in the beginning of the pandemic. And frankly, we've had to all figure out new ways to do that, right? Engage deeply, listen, connect, empathize. For me, that's even evolved over the past, you know, whatever, 9 months in finding new ways to connect with folks who are new to the organization and need to come on board and be part of that. And so, you know, I'm finding different avenues to connect, whether it's, you know, I do these backyard buzzes where I'm listening to small groups of, you know, junior employees at different levels around the globe to just have, you know, connections deeper in the organization because I can't travel. Starting to have different, you know, learning opportunities among the team. You know, obviously, in the midst of driving all this change, we also have to recognize that employees are going through massive transformations on their own in their personal lives. And so keeping health and wellness at the center is something that's been incredibly important for us as well. And so for me, it's about modeling vulnerability, making sure I talk about what I do for myself. You know, my kids will pop into my Zooms in the background and making sure that everyone recognizes that we're all in this together, right? And then, of course, you know, we're also finding that we're connecting with our customers different. And so how do we train our organizations to do that in a digital and remote way? So all of this, of course, is, you know, what all of us have had to do in order to help guide our employees and make sure that they remain productive and aligned and focused during this time.
Yeah, and I think also one of those things that's obviously very interesting is I'm sure you're thinking a little bit about what types of evolution happens in the world of, you know, corporate work going forward as a result of this disruption, right? Like there are some things that might go entirely, you know, back to normal, quote unquote, and then there are some things that have been irrevocably changed and are not going back exactly the way that they were before. So how do you get your, you know, head around solving that as, you know, anticipating where your organization needs to be and where, you know, the workforce is going to be, you know, then that can be everything as simple as, you know, more distributed workforce, you know, mm-hmm. Are there certain types of technology? And I know obviously this in some ways ties into the types of technology and, you know, that you guys dabble with and offer.
Yeah. I mean, I think you kind of tied those things together well. I mean, we think a lot about the future of work at ServiceNow, both in terms of what our technology can do for the world and as well as what that means for our own organization and our own employees. And, you know, I think you're right to say that work has been irrevocably changed. And I think we've almost gone through this incredible change management shock, right, of having to kind of shift how we do things overnight. And again, I think it comes back to digital transformation. Those who have invested in the fundamental software platforms and the tooling to be able to enable that are ahead. And, you know, for us, the way we think about it is, you know, that workflows make a huge difference in how employees experience, you know, remote work. The more you can digitize and automate and connect your systems and processes with a beautiful consumer grade interface, it just makes employees' lives easier to be able to be productive while remote. And, you know, I fundamentally believe that things are going to be really different. And in some ways it's quite positive, right? We've learned to be productive and to work in ways that, you know, we can connect now without necessarily needing to be physical. That has a lot of benefits for people's personal lives, for their work-life balance, et cetera. And as well as their productivity. I think a lot of folks have realized that the days spent, you know, traveling, a lot of those days were unnecessary. There's a lot of wasted calendar days just being on airplanes. You know, we've even personally found that like our, you know, we've changed the length of our board meetings. Our board meetings are probably half as long as they used to be. And the reality is, you know, they probably didn't ever need to be longer. You know, you can accomplish a lot more if you are, it's like Mark Twain, if I had more time, I would write a shorter letter. And I think folks are realizing like, hey, let's be really efficient and make sure we're discussing the most important things as opposed to just filling the day because we happen, you know, make everybody travel to this one place. So I think there's a lot of lessons that have been learned. And frankly, the other thing is I think that this will be an opportunity to really expand the aperture in terms of how we think about talent, you know, allowing people to work in their own communities where they're supported, where they have their families, you know, et cetera, allows us to think about talent in a different way. We don't need to just, you know, hire folks in Silicon Valley anymore, right? We can hire the very best and brightest globally. And that allows us to open up perhaps more diverse talent, just new talent pools that weren't accessible. And so that has huge, huge benefits to the ultimate returns to our business. So, you know, I'm optimistic. And I think that link back to technology is an incredibly important enabler of what I think the future of work is going to look like.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. I think when I think about workflows and processes in general, it's all about, in some ways, you know, how can you outperform somebody else? And I think obviously there's employee retention. If you can have a better process and a better workflow, you're probably going to hold on to people better and become the toast of your industry. But, you know, just to, you know, humor me for a second while I play devil's advocate, why are workflows so important? You know, the reasons I listed, or are there other things that you're noticing that are critical in terms of having the right workflows in place?
Yeah, I mean, I think workflows are incredibly important because enterprises are complex, right? And a lot where data is stored, the systems we use tend to be siloed. They tend to be siloed by function. And that's just not how work gets done. Work gets done across functions, across systems, across data silos. And, you know, as we've squinted at it with our solutions over the years, it's like a lot of productivity and a lot of benefit can happen in terms of, you know, freeing up that kind of low quality time, that low value time, whether it's for your employees or for your customers, as folks have needed to kind of navigate across these systems. And the idea of a workflow engine on top of systems of record really unlocks things. So just think about, I'd love to use the example of onboarding, because I think it's one that everybody's experienced at some point in their lives, right? And when I first started work many, many years ago now, it was a terrible experience. I spent a week in a conference room. Half the time was not like learning about how to do my job, but half the time was filling out paperwork and the same information, right? On different forms, repeated for different departments. And because when you onboard, you're dealing with IT, you're dealing with HR, you're dealing with finance, you're dealing with facilities, you know, all of these functions. And why not make that a beautiful workflow where you fill in the information that you need once it gets shared in the right way? And, you know, it's automated in a device that you're used to using every day on your phone, right? For ordering your Uber, or, you know, maybe these days it's less ordering Uber and it's more, you know, ordering DoorDash or something, right? For food to get delivered. But the point is, it's like it should be a lot simpler than it was. And that's the power of workflow crossing functions and systems. And so I think you're right. Like, ultimately, if you let your imagination kind of expand around that notion, that can drive tremendous employee experiences, customer experiences that just make your life better, make your life more efficient, but also drive a lot of productivity, you know, for the company. And that, you know, that drives, you know, customer loyalty, that drives retention, and ultimately that hits the bottom line.
So building on that, you know, I'm curious a little bit more about your role. I've seen more chief customer officer and chief experience officer type roles these days. You know, why do you think that these roles are being created en masse, and does every organization need them, or does it, you know, really depend on the type of work that you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think they are really important roles. And I do think they're, you know, relative, if you compare, you know, how long the CFO function's been around in an organization, right? The chief customer officer is a much newer role. It's much less defined. And part of it, I think, is this natural, you know, transition to thinking about kind of the income statement versus the balance sheet from a customer perspective. You know, for so long, especially when you think about the phases of a software company, you know, in the beginning, all a software company is thinking about is like, do I have product market fit? And once I get that, how do I grab as many customers as possible? And it's all about, you know, customer acquisition, getting going, building that kind of momentum in the marketplace. And at some point, especially in a SaaS model, you recognize that there's a huge amount of your revenue that's actually coming from existing customers, and making sure that those customers are happy, that they renew and they expand. It's just it's a math equation that, like, you know, if we're not thinking about that and really taking that seriously and investing in that, you know, all of this great work we've done to land these customers is not going to pay off, because, you know, the beauty of the SaaS model is about retention. And so, you know, I think it's absolutely critical to delivering on the, you know, the valuation that's inherent in many of these companies in the marketplace today. And interestingly, it's still a nascent, you know, part of an organization. And I don't think everybody, you know, people are approaching, you know, what needs to be done a little differently. But ultimately, you know, it's driven by customers, and it's driven by this, in some ways, this notion of digital transformation, right? Like, if you're not constantly thinking about your customer's full lifecycle experience, what causes them pain? What gives them delight? You know, where can you make it easier? Where can you exceed their expectations? You're just not going to deliver on the full potential promise of your company. And so that's why I think these are such important conversations. At the end of the day, all of us are successful because our customers are successful and they're getting value from what we're promising, you know, and what we sell. And that to me is why this is such a critical role in companies.
So, yeah, another thing that I've heard, a lot of organizations, they love to talk about how they're customer obsessed now. And I just can't help but think, well, how did you stay in business until now if you were not obsessed with the customer, right? I mean, yeah. It's something we should always have been, in my opinion. But that being said, when you think about like being customer obsessed, what does that mean to you? And then also, how do you strike a balance between leading and being, you know, led by the customer?
Yeah, I mean, I think to be customer success obsessed is to really live and believe that your success, your company's success is truly your customer's success, that they are one and the same, you know, and that's not just about a post-sales organization or a customer success organization. That's about thinking of how can every interaction, every engagement, every decision stem from a customer first ideal? And that means every function in the company needs to believe that they play an important role in keeping our customers successful. So, you know, our legal team has a customer success ideal, right? They think about how can we make doing business with ServiceNow easier by making our contracts clearer, making them less complex, making our MOAs shorter. It's like every single function plays a role there. And that to me is what that means, right? Thinking about the customer first in with every single person, with every single thing that we do.
That brings up like to me a very interesting question, which is how do you then make sure if you're going to do something as an organization to improve the customer experience, how do you make sure that it's quote unquote worth it and pays for itself? And obviously, we all want to believe that anything you can do for your customer is going to bring in more money than it costs you. But the reality is if I say that for every customer on a $500 deal, I'm going to throw in a, you know, free Porsche, and probably I'm going to be out of business quickly, right? So how do you get your head around calculating the, you know, the ROI on improving that customer experience?
Yeah, I mean, these things are measurable when you map out customer journeys and think about customer touch points. You can, you know, almost scientifically link that to, you know, to the customer feedback and link that back to business value. And so we've taken a deep look at this and thought about it. And when you look at the data, you can see the value for us. We know that customers who adopt our software and get to value, they renew and they expand at higher rates. And so just a couple of examples of how we've thought about it. You know, we have success advocates. It's a role that supports more of our kind of commercial and enterprise accounts. A recent comparison that we've done shows that 94% of those customers upgraded to a current release within 6 months of a new release versus 75% prior. So that's like a 19-point difference. And that means they're getting to benefit from the platform faster. We also have success architects, which is kind of our, you know, the role that we use with our largest accounts. And there's a 22-point higher NPS for customers that don't have a success architect. And we know that NPS correlates to, I don't know if you understand the science of NPS, but you know, you have promoters and detractors. And what we've seen in our data is that our promoters spend more money with us, right? They expand meaningfully and they renew at higher rates than detractors. And so the more you can think about how do I build more promoters by thinking about the touch points that matter and really focusing on how do I improve those, that's the way you drive value. And so I think you follow the data, which is based on customer listening, right? Asking them, surveying them, really studying their experience. And then, of course, you can measure that with control groups.
Yeah, it seems like with most organizations that I've ever worked with and spoken to, for the most part, they feel like it's almost sexier, let's say, to focus on customer acquisition as opposed to customer retention. And I'm glad personally that conversation is changing and evolving a little bit. But, you know, have you noticed the same, that just acquisition was the sexier thing to focus on rather than retention? And how much of a shift are you seeing? And also, is it just because people realize realize, particularly if you're in the SaaS world, that retention is so critical for the reasons that you mentioned before.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I think it goes back to kind of what I was talking about earlier. I mean, I guess I think about the world a little bit in like phases of a company's growth. And so, you know, phase one, and I think at some point, you know, Frank Slootman, who is now the CEO of Snowflake, but used to be the CEO of ServiceNow, kind of framed this. And I really agree with it. Like phase one of a software company is kind of zero to $100 million. And in that phase, you're just looking for product market fit and just seeing what, you know, what works. You're trying to capture lightning in a bottle. And if you're lucky enough to be one of those companies who's done that, you move to phase two, which is transitioning from 100 million to a billion in revenue. And that is all about growing. It's all about scaling. And you want to grab as many customers as you possibly can. And that's kind of the name of the game, is showing momentum and taking advantage of that product market fit. And phase three is where you start to think, okay, you know, we really need to scale from a billion-dollar company to a multi-billion-dollar company. And that's where I see great companies really thinking about, okay, how do I systematize? Because you wouldn't have gotten there without having a good customer experience. But how do you systematize that and scale that? And so that's where you see a lot more of these kind of formal customer success programs being built out, et cetera. And, you know, and then, of course, beyond there. So I do think that it should be part of the narrative really from the beginning, but it naturally transitions as people go through as companies go through those phases. And I think you're absolutely right. Like the reality is that the metrics of a SaaS model look at net retention rate from the very beginning. It's always something that companies look at. Unless you are really maniacally focused on customer value, your customer retention rate, your net retention rate won't be as strong as if you don't.
So in terms of what customers are expecting from that relationship with brands and companies that they transact with, how are customer expectations evolving these days? What are one or two things that you're seeing differently in terms of that dynamic?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is around, again, I think the conversation continues to be around the fact that digital transformation is top of mind for folks, right? And that is something that's become ever more clear as part of COVID. And as part of that, the conversations that I have with C-suite executives is about better customer experience, better employee experience, and driving productivity. Because for many, you know, there's been challenge with the top line. And I think there's a couple themes that I see coming out of that are creating, you know, imperatives for customers. The first is that companies have to be innovative and they have to be fast to market. And so for us, we came out within the same quarter, which for scale enterprise SaaS is a big deal. We recognized that this notion of like helping people safely return to work was a very important conversation. And so we envisioned, you know, we saw that problem, built an application and had it ready for market within just a couple months, you know, whether that was return to work, contact tracing, et cetera. And that is incredibly important in times like this where needs are ever changing. I mean, that same conversation is transitioning to vaccine management now, right? And so being able to see market needs and innovate quickly is key. The second thing that's, I think, very clear is time to value. So again, I mentioned cost pressure, you know, that is very true. And so whenever a dollar is spent, the need to demonstrate ROI quickly is absolutely imperative. And that's thinking about business value, right? What is the value in the customer's mind, in their language that matters to them? And so we've seen, you know, our implementations are shorter. We're more agile. We were focused on milestones. And, you know, we have implementations that are happening now in days and weeks that, you know, in a pre-COVID world, were happening kind of months and quarters. It's like that focus on time to value is critical. And I think all of this is rooted in ultimately making people's lives better. Right. And, you know, what we're focused on is what is the impact on the person on the other side of this, whether it's a mobile app that makes veterans' lives easier by delivering some of these workflows, or bots that frankly help our healthcare providers focus on spending time with their patients. You know, we had a customer, HonorHealth, who was a healthcare provider, as you know, in Arizona, who was dealing with just a complete overload of calls to their nurses' hotline when everyone was trying to figure out, like, you know, am I sick? Do I have this? Whatever. And by quickly, you know, leveraging our platform, automating some of those calls, then they found that 80% of those calls were deflected through automation. So the nurses could focus on just the life-saving patients they had to talk to. And that was implemented in 3 days because they had the foundational platform invested in. And so, you know, at the end of the day, it's always about people, nurses, frontline workers, city planners, educators, whatever, making sure we capture the notion of how are people's lives getting better because of this. That's the inspiring part. And frankly, being able to articulate that, I think, is aligned with that notion of demonstrating value, right? And that, to me, is more important now than ever.
I think that's a beautiful spot to leave things on. So, Lara, thank you so much for making the time. Really appreciate it. I think people will get a lot out of this conversation.
Thanks so much. I appreciate the conversation. Thanks for the time.
Thanks again to Lara for making the time. It's nice to learn from someone at the intersection of customer centricity and digital transformation, two things that are going to be only more important as time goes on. If you like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and B. Cortuccio, and assistant producer Aaron Cohen. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.